You're listening to Sipping on Some Crime podcast, hosted by Aaron. This podcast covers sensitive and triggering subjects, explicit language, and mature content which may not be suitable for children. As always, all parties are innocent until proven guilty.
Today will be a mini episode on Roger Kelly. On a cold January night in 2000, a 50-year-old trucker from Oregon, Roger Kelly, would be fatally shot by an unknown person in Nevada, and 22 years later, two sisters are still desperately trying to piece together the final days of their father's life in hopes of bringing him justice. Roger Kelly would meet Diane Salgago in Corning, California in 1976. At this time, Roger was a Vietnam vet turned trucker and was dining at a truck stop, and Diane was his waitress. Roger had a prankster personality and thought Diane was super attractive. He wanted to get her attention, so he would call her over to fill his coffee cup. And then when she showed up at the table with the coffee pitcher in hand, ready to fill his cup, he would look at her and say, "Why are you here? I didn't call you over." He continued to do this to her a few more times, which annoyed her, but it definitely caught her attention. And the rest is history, as they say. Diane had a little girl named Amy, who was 3, and another little girl named Amber that was just a baby when Roger came into the picture. Roger became that father role for both sisters right away. Amy describes Roger as a funny jokester who really liked to laugh but was also a very hardworking man. She has a fond memory of him teaching her how to read when she was little. In one memory in particular, Roger sat on the front porch with a magnet board and letters spelling out truck stop for little Amy to read. When the girls were little and out of school for the summer, Roger would bring the girls on some of his trucking trips. Both girls have fond memories of those trips. Roger really made it fun for them to road trip each time. They would stop and fill up on a bunch of unhealthy snacks, stuff them in the middle of the console, and the girls were able, day and night, to go up there and grab whatever snacks they felt like. They had a blast. When Roger couldn't be with them and he had really long trips, he would bring with him a little recorder and record tapes for his girls, telling them stories and making funny jokes and funny voices. He was really connected to his stepdaughters. Both girls have those tapes now, and they say they are very nice memories. Amy said that Roger did have his demons. When she was 9 or 10, she asked Roger plainly to his face if he was using. He admitted to using speed and amphetamines when he was trucking to help keep him awake on long hauls. It was a cycle for him, but Roger had gotten clean many times before his death. Amy says that her and her sister were raised by two addicts, and while Roger was pretty transparent and honest about his use, she sometimes found it hard to trust him when he was running long hauls and working really hard, that he wouldn't turn back to using. Eventually, Roger and Diane would split, but that didn't keep him from being very involved as a father with both of his girls. He even walked Amy down the aisle when she got married in 96. He never missed an event and never forgot a birthday. He was their father despite the divorce. At the time of Kelly's death, he was working as a company driver for a transportation company out of Lapine, Oregon. On his way back, he was going to stop in California to see his daughter Amber before heading back to Oregon. This is something that he would do whenever he was close to one of the daughters. He would see if he could stop by, eat dinner, catch up with them, take a shower, maybe sleep there, and then continue on his trip. Whenever his route allowed, he would make sure to stop and see his girls. 9 days before his death, it was becoming apparent that Roger wasn't happy at the company he was at. He would text from his phone in all capital letters, "My trucking days are over." He was frustrated with the company because the company was failing to find him backhauls, which meant most of the time he spent going back to Oregon, making no money after dropping off his load. On Roger's last trip, he was bringing a load to Fernley, Nevada from Oregon, dropping that load off, and then would be picking up an additional load from another company in Fernley that specializes in insulation products and deliver that load to Medford, Oregon. Amy remembers speaking to her father about 3 days before his death and him sounding very busy and really stressed. Both sisters had noticed in the months and the weeks leading up to his death that something was a little off with his behavior, but they just kind of figured it was due to how many runs he was doing for this company and how hard he was working and how frustrated he was that he wasn't getting all the hauls on the way back to make it worth it. January 3rd, 2000 was Amy's birthday, and her father never missed a chance to call or send her a dozen yellow roses for her birthday. But this birthday he didn't call, and roses didn't come. Roger would call Amy a few days later, and even though they had a really open, laughing, joking relationship, she didn't want to pick on him about not calling her on her birthday. She didn't even want to bring it up. And now looking back, she's glad she didn't, because it was the last conversation they ever had. January 9th, 2000. That morning, Roger departed from Wells, Nevada, to his drop-off point in Fernley, where he was to arrive the following day. On his drive that day on Interstate 80, he stopped to fuel up that afternoon and decided to play some video poker. And he won a few hundred dollars. According to the initial investigation report, it states that Roger had been in an altercation earlier that day while at the fuel stop, located just 4 hours from Fernley. That Sunday night, when Roger arrived in Fernley around 9 p.m., he parked for the night in a lot in the west of the Best Western Hotel. Back then, the lot was a big dirt parking lot, and there was a trailer park behind it. However, in the last 22 years, the lot has been repaved and the trailer park replaced with a car dealership. At some point after parking, Roger would grab his flashlight, get out of his truck, and open his engine compartment. Investigators believe he was looking inside of the compartment when someone came up and shot Roger in the chest, fatally injuring him. When investigators arrive on the scene, they find Roger deceased. They see what looks like a murder weapon lying with Roger's body. When they begin inspecting it, they realize right away this isn't a store-purchased gun. It looks like it's homemade. I'm no gun expert or even novice, but to me it looks like a small shotgun barrel that's been sawed off and a long thin barrel has been welded on. The grip of the gun also looks like it's replaced with an awkwardly shaped homemade handle. I have added the pictures to my site so that you can see it. Along with the weapon being recovered at the scene, they also found that nothing of Roger's had been stolen. They decided to rule out attempted robbery pretty quickly, so now, what was the motive? There are no witnesses of the altercation, but there is witness reports of a young man in the area acting very strange. They said he was a Caucasian male in his late 20s to early 30s, between 5'7 and 5'11, weighing anywhere between 135 pounds to 155 pounds. There was a composite sketch made and circulated to the public, but no promising leads came in. Investigators knew the gun was their best piece of evidence. The only problem was they couldn't retrieve prints off of it, and they needed help to test it for DNA. It would be sent to an FBI lab in Quantico, Virginia, for all testing available, and gun experts have been consulted on the unique make and weapon in hopes it may bring new leads, but nothing new has come forward. Roger's family, especially his daughters, feel like the initial investigation into their dad's case wasn't taken as seriously as it should have been from the beginning because he wasn't from their state, wasn't a resident, but a trucker passing through. There were just other incidents throughout the initial investigation that made his daughters feel like they weren't doing everything they could do to solve this. When looking back at the initial pictures of the scene, there was another hauling truck parked close to Roger in the same dirt lot. But there's no record of that driver ever being interviewed. Roger's file also indicates that some promising leads did come in early, and at the beginning of the investigation, they were not followed up on, as they should have been, and not given the full attention that they deserved. This would lead to years of unanswered questions for Roger's daughters. 22 years later, and a new lead investigator is working hard to get Roger his justice and bring his daughter some well-deserved answers. Lieutenant Detective Pattison has reached out to his daughters, and they are happy to have them working their dad's case. Pattison has the same questions about why there wasn't more done in the beginning of the investigation. On the 20th anniversary, Pattison posted about Roger's case on the Lyon County Sheriff's official website, and that brought in one tip that was strange, but no new leads. Today, the case remains unsolved. Pattison said, quote, "I've always had a passion for those forgotten cases that have been neglected and withered on the vine. But these cases really should never have gotten to that point because the victims and their families still need a voice and they still need their case solved," unquote. There are two daughters that just want to know why. Why their dad? What happened that night to Roger that he had to lose his life? There are many theories investigators are looking at. They know Roger had an altercation that day at a fueling stop and have asked questions if that had anything to do with his murder. I don't have more details on that theory. I wish I did. I don't know at what time in the day the altercation took place, how many miles from his final stop that night. I don't have any of that information to be able to gauge why this is a theory, but it is a theory that they have. They also have a theory about it being someone local that lived in the area, but again, there's not information as to why that's a theory or what points them in that direction. It would be nice to know more information about the parking lot that night that Roger parked in. Was it one that he frequented on runs? Was it an area he was familiar with? How many other truckers were parked there that night? Were they all interviewed? What about the residents of the trailer park or guests at the motel? Were they all questioned? They must have interviewed some people because they have this composite sketch of a man that was acting strange in the area. But nobody said they saw him anywhere near Roger, just that there was this strange man acting weird in this same area. Unfortunately, this is another case with such limited information, so a lot of these questions probably have very good, valid answers, but they have not been shared publicly. I will be putting up a link to Roger's case profile on the Lyon County Sheriff's Office so that you can see pictures of Roger, the composite sketch, the photos of the gun, etc. Please share Roger's story in whatever format you're comfortable with, and if you have a moment, I would appreciate your review of my podcast. If you're listening on Apple or Spotify, please hit the subscribe button. It helps others find this show and these cases reach more listeners. Don't forget, when you see those missing and murdered posts on social media, to hit like, share, and retweet. Every time we share a face, we get closer to solving a case. Until next time.